Real Success Blueprint, the podcast for realtors by realtors. I'm your host, Laura Dahl. I've been in real estate field for over 25 years. Throughout my career, I've learned valuable lessons, achieved significant successes, and now I'm excited to share these insights with you. So let's dive in and start building your blueprint for real success in real estate.
Okay, so first of all, I'm going to tell you real quick that lead generation is not a one-size-all strategy, right? What works for one agent may not work for someone else. There is not a one-size-fits-all. It is highly dependent upon your personality, what you are willing to do, because there are lots of people who are willing to door knock and they have great success out of it. Whereas I'm not going to knock on your door. I'm not getting the dogs involved. I am not, you know, going to scare you at 6 o'clock at night when you're trying to get your kids fed. It's just not my thing. So, but there are lots of agents who do door knock and have great success. So what works for one agent may not work for you. What works for you may not work for somebody else. It is going to be highly dependent upon the energy that you put behind it. It's going to be highly dependent upon your skill set. And you're going to see in here, there's a really good quote by Gary Vee about just that thing. But I just want you to know that, you know, there's tons of ideas and strategies out there. Just because it doesn't work for somebody else doesn't mean it won't work for you. And I need you to not listen to the naysayers of the people who try to talk you out of doing something that you want to do. And so you've given it a try and you put your personality and your spin on it. You don't let anyone tell you that it won't work for you. You do it and try it and give it your best shot and take it from there. Okay. So before we begin, I want you, one first thing you need to realize is that lead generation has to be a part of your daily routine, no matter what. You will hear all coaches telling you, you should be doing lead generation a minimum of 2 hours a day. If I could get half my coaching clients to even generate leads for 1 hour a day, they would see growth in their business. But most agents are not committed. They're interested. They start out great. They've got good momentum and they do it for a couple of days and then they drop off. And so the best thing I can tell you is that, you know, we've talked about this before. There is no routine in our schedule. There's no routine. We don't work 9 to 5. You know, typically we work odd hours. We are in charge of our schedule. And I'm just going to tell you that lead generation has to be part of your daily routine in order for you to build a growing business that you can depend on and rely on. So let's talk about what lead generation is and what it isn't. Lead generation are activities that produce opportunities for new business, period. Opportunities for new business. It is meeting new people that want to do business with you. The reason I'm saying this is because I have evaluated lots of clients, coaching client schedules, where they told me that they did 2 hours of lead generation a day, but the lead generation that they're doing is literally going through their database and cherry picking who they want to talk to. In my opinion, that's not generating new leads. That is you cultivating the existing business, book of business that you have. So what I want you to know is that what you need to look at it as, I need to do engage in activities that produce new opportunities for me for new business. And I need to meet new people that want to do business with me, that are interested in doing business with me. What lead generation is not, is updating your database. That's not generating a new lead, right? That is maintaining. That's maintenance. That's cultivating. That's building relationships from existing relationships you already have. Lead generation is not posting anything on social media that does not produce leads. Posting on social media is part of your marketing plan. That's a part of your promotion. But that is not necessarily a generation of leads unless you have call to actions built in your posts, unless you have engagement where people are saying, sign me up, let me have that, give me, here's my information, please share with me your book or your guide or whatever it is. Posting on social media is a very low level activity that most times does not lead to a paycheck. So I want you to be cautious and careful if you are spending time posting on social media and count that as your lead generation, unless you are actually generating leads where people say, please call me, I have a house to sell, or I would like to buy a house from you, and it is not producing new opportunities for you, then it is not lead generation. Okay. Networking with no results is also not lead generation. And I see agents all the time that attend networking events where there's nothing but realtors in the room. Unless you are the queen of networking and you are the queen of getting referrals from other agents locally, that is not a source of lead generation. That is not generating new business opportunities for you. The other thing is, if you are a great networker, you love to drink wine and eat snacks, but you don't leave with contacts, you don't leave the event with opportunities to follow up on, then you are not networking the proper way. Right? That is also not lead generation. So I want you to be very careful and cautious about how you're utilizing your time. Are they low value activities or are they high value activities that lead to a paycheck? Are they producing opportunities that give you the ability to follow up later? Are you meeting new people to put in your database on a daily basis? Are people signing up for things, asking for more information, or making appointments with you? Those are my qualifiers for, did I generate a lead today? Okay. All right. Let's talk about active versus passive lead generation. So this comes from Michael Mayer's Several Levels of Communication. If you've not read that book, go get it. It is a very great book, Michael Mayer's M-A-H-E-R. This is the communication pyramid. And the reason I'm sharing it with you is because I find it to be very powerful in you deciding what kind of activities you want to engage in your business. And it has the impact along the axis, and you have two different zones. One is an informational zone and one is an influential zone. Obviously, where are the money generating activities? They're coming from which zone? Obviously, the influential zone, right? The educational zone is where we are doing our job to educate people about what we do and how we do it and what they need to know about the home buying and home selling process. But in the influential zone is where we make impact. That is where we are going to get the most return for our money, the most return for our time and energy. Most agents love emails. They love text messages. They don't like phone calls, right? And some of our clients necessarily don't like phone calls. And I get that. But are you making an impact through a text message or an email? And I want you to look at, can the impact be greater? Advertising and direct mail. Direct mail is like your postcards that you send out to an apartment complex. Unless there's some call to action or some value in it, or something that drives them back to me, it's going right in the trash. It's a very passive activity where you can just mail, and there's a low rate of return on your investment, and you don't know if there's actually an impact being made because it's just being received on one end. There's no follow-up on that. There's no engagement on that, right? Your handwritten notes, you'll see, are in the middle, but I think they're more in the influential side. People don't do handwritten notes anymore. Very rarely do people mail things to each other anymore. We're bombarded with emails. I mean, y'all don't even want to know. There's 102,000 emails in my Gmail right now, which would drive some people crazy. Emily said me too. But the reality is that we're bombarded with emails and electronic communication. Go old school, back to personalizing handwritten notes. I think that should be more in the influential zone as well. And then the phone calls, are the phone calls that you're making important? Like, are you leaving people a reason to call you back? Have you piqued their interest enough for them to want to pick up the phone and say, hey, I saw you called and I wanted to see what you needed? You know, if you're just leaving a message that says, hi, I'm Laura Dahl, I'm a realtor and so-and-so, was interested to see if you had any real estate needs today, you're not getting a call back. That's not important enough. You haven't given any value of why I should even call you back, or any mystery. I love mystery. So again, I love to leave messages that say, hey, it's Laura Dahl with Benchmark Realty. I've got something really important I want to talk with you about. Could you please give me a call back this afternoon at your convenience? Now you have no idea what I want to talk to you about. You're intrigued. Why would I be calling you? especially if we haven't spoken in a while. And now I'm more likely to call you back. But if I just say, hey, it's Laura Dahl, I'm going through my database today, I want to see if you know any, if anybody that's interested in buying or selling real estate, that's not going to work. No one's calling you back. Okay. So leave a little mystery on your voicemail. Hey, I really have something important I want to share with you today. I want to talk to you about, or I have a quick question for you. Do you mind giving me a call back today at your earliest convenience, right? Make them want to think that there's a really important reason that you want to talk to them. Don't just leave a voicemail. And some coaches will tell you, don't leave a voicemail at all. But I just don't operate that way. I feel like you have precious, you know, I would call it real estate, you know, precious real estate there to leave an impactful message full of value to get them to call you back. Events and seminars give you the opportunity to make the biggest impact because it allows you to be, the expert, allows you to get up and have the floor to tell people what you do and how you do it. Your event can have 5 people at it. It can have 500 people at it. It does not matter how big the event is. The purpose is, can you reach more people at one time with an event versus making 50 phone calls or meeting people one-on-one 50 times? Or can I do that in an event where they still get to see me as the expert, get to see me and hear me talk about what I do and how I do it? And then the very top of the pyramid is the one-on-one meetings, which is where you have the greatest impact and the greatest opportunity to influence people. So I just want to show you this chart because, again, giving your card to someone is very passive. Getting their information in return is active. That gives me something to follow up on. So when I'm meeting people in a coffee shop, I'm meeting, if I go to the fire station, I drop off donuts, whatever it is, I'm not just giving my card to them and saying, hey, give me a call if you need a real estate thing. I'm actually giving my card and then asking for information in return. Can I add you to my magazine distribution list? Can I add you to my newsletter distribution list? Can I send you a market update once a quarter? Would that be okay with you? Can I have your email address so that I can send that to you? Or using your digital card instead of a regular card so that you can send them the information and that's your way of asking for their information, right? But I want you to think about, is the activity that I'm engaging in, is it influential or is it informational? And informational is fine, but is that going to get me information in return, their information in return? Or am I going to get engagement from that? Am I going to actually produce leads from that? Or am I just giving out all my knowledge for free, right? And just educating people with no ask in return, okay? So I just want to make sure that you guys are aware and very keenly aware of the difference between passive activities and active activities. When we get into the list of 50 lead generation strategies I have, you'll see some are passive, some are active. I would encourage you to choose more that are active than passive, because passive is the ones that you get really comfortable with. Those are the ones you can hide behind the keyboard on. Those are the ones that don't require you to be vulnerable. They're the ones that don't require you to actually put forth a lot of energy and effort. And again, transformation doesn't happen in those zones. Did you hear me say that? I'll say that again. Transformation does not happen in those zones. Transformation happens in the influential zone, in the active zone, not just in the educational and the passive part. All right, let's talk about paid versus unpaid. I think every person in this room knows what my preference is. It will always be unpaid and organic lead generation. But I will tell you this, having picked up my business and moved it 3 states, 3 different times, sometimes I had to rely on paid lead generation to get going faster, to jumpstart my business quicker, to produce leads faster than the time it would take for me to cultivate organic leads. So sometimes paid lead generation is necessary or important. It's going to be determined by the budget that you have. And I would tell you, whether you're looking at paid or unpaid, you should be determining how much you are willing to pay to acquire a new lead. What is your budget for how much you're willing to spend to get a new lead? For me, that might be a box of donuts. It might be $25. It might be $100. I think you take your average sales price and think about what your potential earnings are. And for each one of you is determining, you're going to determine how much that person is worth to me. How much is each person in your database worth to you? If you have to meet so many people in order to produce one sale, you should be able to calculate what each person is worth to you in your database. But you also should have a client acquisition cost, which is, I'm perfectly fine spending $50 if it picked me up a $500,000 buyer, because $50 is not that much when you look at how much my potential income is for that. But you need to determine how much a new lead is worth to you, how much does it cost you to generate that lead, and make sure that you understand that each time you are engaging in passive activities, that you are not actually probably investing the money that it takes in order to get, or time that it takes in order to produce that lead. Does that make sense to everybody? Y'all all taking naps on me? No? Okay. All right. The other part is, if you avoid answering the phone or calling within 2 minutes of receiving a lead and you have no follow-up plan, don't bother signing up for a paid lead generation system. You're wasting your money. It's going to go right down the toilet. If you are one of those people, and I watched this when I owned my firm, I had so many agents that signed up for our lead generation, like where we gave them company leads. And I would be sitting in the office with them and a new lead would come in, assigned to that agent, and they would look at it and look at their phone and go, oh, I'll see if they leave a voicemail and I'll call back in a minute. Well, you're paying for that person to be on the phone. You're paying for the opportunity to talk to them while they are interested in real estate, while they are online searching. And for you to look at it and not answer the phone, I think you're wasting your time and your money, period. Internet leads, first of all, it's six times harder to convert an internet lead than someone you know, right? Six or eight, somewhere between those two. But I will tell you, if you're going to spend money to generate leads, but you're afraid to answer the phone when they call, or you let it go to voicemail, or you like, oh, I'll call them back in an hour. The name of the game with internet leads is speed. Speed to the lead wins, because they're going to go on to the next website. They're going to go on to the next link. They're actually going to go on to the next call and call the next agent. You have to call them within the first 2 minutes, and you have to speak to them on the phone and capture them right away. Otherwise, you're opportunity of converting that goes down by 50% every minute that goes by that person. So after the first 5 minutes, you've already lost. So if you are one of these people that's paying for lead generation, but you don't answer the phone or you don't call quickly, and then the time when the lead comes in, I think you're wasting your money. The other part is, it takes 7 to 10 touches to convert a lead. So if you're only calling them the first time the lead comes in, and maybe one other time a couple of days later, and then you give up after that because you weren't able to reach them, you're also wasting your time and your money, because it takes 7 to 10 touches to convert a cold lead that you don't know. So everybody with me on that? I'm on my soapbox. I realize I get heated and passionate about it because I've spent a lot of money generating leads for agents, a lot of money in my brokerage, a lot of money in my career generating. I've paid for Zillow. I've paid Realtor. I've done every lead generation that you could possibly do. And I'm just telling you that I've done it, and I know what it takes to be successful to convert it. And if you're not willing to answer the phone, and you're not willing to get to them within those first 2 minutes, and you're not willing to go 7 to 10 touches, don't bother spending your money, because you're just going to be wasting it. Okay. It can be faster to build your pipeline with paid leads versus unpaid leads. It just depends on the type of lead generation strategies you use. So unpaid ones obviously are organically produced. They come from your relationships. They come with your efforts and energy that you're putting in with the people that you've met. If you're networking and you guys struck up a conversation about, you know, their mom being in a memory care unit, and then later you followed up with a list of, you know, or maybe they're having memory problems and you wanted to give them a list of memory care, you know, facilities near us or something like that. That's a one touch that you would follow up with, but that's going to be a whole lot easier to, you know, convert that person to a real estate client when you've offered them something of value that's meaningful and personal. They are 6 times easier to convert as clients based on the energy that you put forth in massaging and cultivating that relationship. There are various types of unpaid lead generation strategies. You need to find the ones that fit your personality and your style and the ones that are effective for you. Unpaid ones obviously are a lower cost to acquire, but even if you had a budget for how much I'm willing to spend to acquire a client, unpaid lead generation sources typically still have lower cost per lead. So for example, if you're in Zillow, you're talking about buying Zillow leads anywhere in the Middle Tennessee area, there's not a zip code, I think, that is less than $2,000 a month, and you're only guaranteed 3 or 4 leads for that. If I had $2,000 to spend on organic lead generation, each one of those leads, for $2,000, I could probably generate 500 leads. Do you see what I'm saying? So the cost per lead goes down drastically when you focus on organic things rather than paid leads. Everybody with me there? The other thing is that it may take longer to see results. The other thing that I see with a lot of coaching clients and a lot of agents that have worked for me is that we will go over tons of lead generation strategies. We'll pick the ones that work for them. They will try it once and don't see results and quit and move on to something else. You guys know I've said this many times. Often we do not see evidence of what we're doing as working or being effective for 6 or 9 months. Right? Sometimes you don't see the evidence of what we're doing for 30, 60, or 90 days as working, but most agents don't have the tenacity to stick with something for 30, 60, or 90 days. They tried something once and didn't see results immediately, and so they moved on to a different strategy. And my advice to you is it may take longer to see the results of what you're doing. Don't give up after one try. Give it some time, keep doing it, and look for the evidence after 30, 60, or 90 days. I promise you, if you can do it consistently, you will see evidence that it's working after that amount of time. But most agents try it once. They didn't get the immediate feedback that it's working and that they want to do it. So then they quit and move in a different direction. And they didn't even give it a try to see if it actually produces the results they're looking for. Y'all with me there? All right. What works for some won't work for all. Find what works for you. And I love this analogy. Gary V says it best when he said, for me, the return on an investment of a piano is 0%, because I don't play the piano. I wouldn't even know what to do with it. I love it. I love the look at it, but I don't know what to do with it. But for Elton John, it's astronomical because he has a skill and a talent to use that piano to create something amazing. And I would say the same thing applies for you guys when you're selecting these lead generation strategies. What works for one person might work really well, but may not work for you because you don't possess the skill set to make that happen. And I will use the example of being super internet savvy. There are some lead generation strategies that require a lot of technical skill, but if you're not that person, you're going to struggle to make that work for you. So I just liked the quote because I thought it was very relatable that some of you will have more skills and talents than others, and you can apply those to your lead generation strategies as well. So I wanted you to look at a lead generation timeline. Obviously, your first step is to generate the lead, obviously. You should have an immediate response. And again, your follow-up should be within the first 2 minutes. You should be sending a thank you note or a post acknowledging if this lead came from someone you know in your group, if it was a referral to you. Even if it's not a referral, if I generated a lead at a networking event, they're getting a handwritten note. If I met them through a Facebook group or some kind of meetup group or something like that, I'm actually going to send a note or a post saying, you know what? I went to a networking event last Thursday, and that's where I met so-and-so, and I really enjoyed our conversation. It was just a breath of fresh air meeting somebody that I jived with that I thought was a great, whatever they did, you know, talking about them. But the bottom line is people like to be acknowledged, and they like to see their name a lot of times. So posts are really important, but you should have an immediate response. Here's the other thing. Because you know I'm about systems and processes. What is your response when a new lead comes in? How are you introducing yourself to them? You should have in your notes on your phone a templated introduction that just says, you know, thank you for visiting my website, however the lead came into you, but you should be acknowledging, you know, who you are and what you do and that you're looking forward to working with them, but you should have something saved already so that every time a lead comes in, you're not typing the same response. It should be in your notes. So you just copy and paste it, right? I'm really looking forward to working with you. Here's a link to my introductory video where I talk a little bit more about myself and how we're going to work together. But you should have a system for onboarding a new lead. What does that look like? Do you send a video text introducing yourself? Do you send them a copy of your one sheet? Do you, you know, send them a link to your website? Do you send them to your Google reviews page? What do you do when you onboard a new lead? But there should be a system for that. And what does that look like? Because every lead, no matter if you generated yourself, if you paid for it, if it came through your website, if it came through a Facebook group, there should be a process that you have documented that says, when I get a new lead, this is how I respond. And this is my 7 to 10 touch follow-up plan for how I respond to them. You'll see that your first step was to generate it. Your second step was your immediate response. The onboarding is your process. What do you introduce yourself with? And then you must cultivate the lead. How do you maintain their interest in you? If I met someone at a networking event 2 weeks ago, what am I saying to that person over the next 2 or 3 weeks to maintain their interest, to keep them talking to me, to get them interested in more information about me or my services? What does the cultivation of your leads look like? And do you have this documented anywhere so that you are following the same thing every time you're onboarding a new client? And then how do you follow up with those 7 to 10 touches? So I have shared before my $7 to $10 million follow-up plan, but basically, are you sending a video text? Do you send them a link to your one sheet? Do you have other collateral material? Remember a couple of weeks ago, we did the collateral material you need for your business. What are you sharing with them? Then do you follow up with a phone call? Do you send an email? Do you send a text next? Do you give them a copy of your magazine? Do you drop off a pop-by gift? Do you send them a handwritten note or a card, you know, with something for their kids? Like whatever it is, you should have a follow-up plan documented that goes 7 to 10 touches. Most agents go 2 or 3 max. And if you know you have to go 7 to 10 to convert a lead, why do we stop at 2 or 3? Because we start to feel salesy. We start to feel like we're bothering people and we haven't gotten a response yet that we like that says that they're interested in working with us. But you're not going the distance and giving them enough information to decide that if you only go 2 or 3 touches. I'm going to say that again for you. If you only go 2 or 3 touches, you are not giving them enough information to decide that they want to work with you. So you must go 7 to 10 touches to help cultivate the relationship, educate them about who you are and what you do, and to give them enough information to decide that you're likable and trustworthy and they want to work with you. Does that make sense? Stop going 2 or 3 touches, go 7 to 10. Okay. What to do? First of all, you've got to determine your budget. You are running a business. Every business has a marketing budget. Every business has a marketing plan. Every business has a client acquisition cost, what it costs them to get a new person to walk in their store. These companies have figured out exactly. I used to do research for companies all across the country. We tracked the POS system that they use. We tracked if they had beacons. We tracked if they had newsletters, if they had rewards programs. We tracked basically data from every consumer that utilized their services or went in their store. And then we sold that data to big companies like Microsoft or whatever. But what I determined is that each one of these companies has an acquisition cost that they're willing. It's just like when they do promos, like get a free cheese dip, you know, when you put your phone number in on the screen at the Mexican restaurant, it's the same thing. They're spending some money to acquire you as a loyal customer. And I would just ask you, is there a budget that you have that you are willing to spend to acquire new people? You should investigate sources of paid leads. If you're interested in paid leads at all, I prefer you to use organic unpaid leads. So I'm just going to tell you that right now. Use that money in 100 other ways to organically produce results versus paid. But I just will tell you, if you're doing paid leads, I want you to investigate the highest rate of return. Are the leads that they're promising you exclusive, or are they resold to other agents? And then how many leads are guaranteed? So again, Zillow will tell you, oh, well, we can guarantee you 5 leads for $2,500 a month. That is a big budget for 5 leads that you can spend somewhere else. And you probably could produce 500 leads in that same cost if you choose a different strategy. But I'm just putting it out there. There are people who love paid lead generation platforms, and that's fine. I just want you to be smart about how you spend your money and make sure that you're going to get a return on it before you run out of money. That's all. Choose your favorite strategy. So choose a strategy you enjoy that allows you to extract the most opportunities. The reason I say this is because there are lots of coaches out there that are going to tell you, well, you know, go knock on doors or go do open houses or go, you know, host some type of event, whatever. There are people who are terrified of getting up in front of a group of people to talk about what they do and how they do it. Remember, you don't have to be the host of the event. You can participate in the event. You know, you only need 2 minutes to talk about what you do and what you do differently and what makes you unique. You don't have to host the whole event. You can piggyback on somebody else's event. If door knocking is not your thing, that's totally fine. What is your thing? But choose something that works with your personality, because I will tell you that if I tell you to go door knock and you don't like talking to strangers and you certainly are concerned about your safety, you're not going to be able to stick with that as a lead generation strategy. It's not going to be effective for you. You're going to get defeated. And when you lose momentum, you stop doing it. And when you stop doing it, your business is going to crumble. You're going to have nothing in your pipeline. The other thing is, like I said, keep at it. Don't quit just because you don't see the results right away. So let's talk about some lead generation strategies real quick. Suggestions and examples of things that I think you should do to generate leads. There's going to be tons of ideas out there that that you might find on your own that are just as effective, and that's totally fine. I don't really care. I want you to use what works for you. And I want to make sure that you are, you know, choosing things that meet your personality and, you know, fit with something that you enjoy doing. Because if you hate it, you're going to be less likely to actually participate in it or do it every day if you hate doing it. So that's one thing that the other reason why I want you to make sure that you're choosing something that makes sense for your personality or something that you like doing. Here's the other thing that I want to make sure I say. Do not try to do all of these. Pick one or two that you really enjoy or something that is of interest to you, but pick 5 or 6, 3 or 4, whatever it is, and do them well. You don't have to do all 50 of these. That will overwhelm you. That will, you know, you'll run out of money, that kind of stuff. You'll run out of energy. You don't have to do all the things. You just have to do the few things that are effective very well and do them consistently. So I tell my coaching clients to choose 5 or 6 ideas that resonate with them. So I'm just going to go through them with you. Obviously, contacting your sphere of influence often is very important. Remember, that's not generating new business. That's just cultivating the existing business you have. Developing a list of 25 of your biggest advocates, of making sure that these are people that you have spent one-on-one time with, making sure that they know who your target client is and who you want to work with. Make sure that they know what makes you different. You've told them how to refer people to you. These are not just people who are handing out your cards. These are people who are going the extra mile to say 3 or 4 things about what working with you is like. People who are seeking opportunities for you. Do you guys notice the difference between that? Someone who's just handing out my card is reactive. I want someone who's my advocate, who is out looking for an opportunity for me to refer business to me. That's the difference, okay? You should develop a hit list of new money. Those are people who know you or know about you, but are not quite your advocates yet. So these are people that have watched you on social media, maybe you have a relationship with, You don't really know who their realtor of choice is yet. You haven't found that out yet. There are people you have introduced yourself to, but you don't have a budding building relationship yet. And these are people that you want to build relationship with. People that are on my hit list are connectors. They are the people who work in HR. They're the people who deal with a lot of people who are around my target clients. So when I used to sell to doctors, the people in the hospitals that did the credentialing for the doctors are on my hit list, because those are the people that I'm whining and dining, trying to get them to know me so that I become the person they refer to their incoming doctors. Does that make sense who the hit list people are? They are new sources of money for you, anywhere where you have new opportunities. Creating a Facebook business page, this is kind of old school. Here's what I will tell you about business pages on Facebook. If you don't have an audience, it doesn't matter. You don't need it if there's nobody following you. Back in the day, we used to have a business page. We used to have a business page because Facebook did not like us promoting our business on our personal pages. That has shifted and they don't care anymore. So you'll see most agents just put all their stuff on their main page. They don't have a separate business page. The only reason I tell you to create a Facebook business page is because you cannot run sponsored ads from a personal page. And if you're going to run sponsored ads or Facebook ads, you have to have a business page in order to do that. Okay. So that's why I'm telling you to do it. Post on Instagram with local tags. Here's the other thing I was going to tell you, not just Instagram. So I read an article on Inman News about Twitter and why most agents don't use it correctly and why you should consider going back to using it, or at least investigating whether it's for you, is that Twitter allows you to search by keywords. So you can search condo for sale in Murfreesboro or Nashville house for sale or Nashville, Nashville house with a pool or moving to Nashville, those kinds of keywords. Don't use Nashville real estate because that's too broad. And you also want to use keywords that people are actually using in their posts, in their tweets. And so what happens is no other Facebook will allow you to search like this, but you're not going to get the same content that is going to come up. You're going to get sponsored ads. On Twitter, when you search for, you know, Nashville condo for sale, you're going to see conversations where someone says, I have to sell my condo, I'm moving to Nashville, something like that. And it allows you to see conversations where people are talking about the keywords that you're searching for, and no other social platform works that way. So I'm not telling you to be a guru on Twitter. I'm just telling you, you may want to consider going back and checking your profile on Twitter and using it to generate leads, is my point. And then you can have organic conversations about the keywords that you search for. Does that make sense to everybody? Yeah. Utilizing LinkedIn. Most of you have a profile on LinkedIn, but you're not using it. Are you posting marketing updates on there? Are you posting articles about prepping your home for sale? Are you posting articles about the market conditions? Do you have a video in your profile on LinkedIn that talks about you and what you do, an introduction? Are you using LinkedIn to actually generate leads or make connections? Or do you just house a profile there hoping that people stumble across it? And I will tell you, most of us are in the latter category, right? So I would just tell you that, you know, you have a lot of opportunities on LinkedIn that we're not using. Use YouTube for seller leads. Again, you can create seller landing pages for sellers. You can create videos for all kinds of things. You can create a channel. Your videos do not have to be long. You can do a series. So for example, let's say I break down the home buying process into 12 steps. I can create a video for each one of those steps. Put that on my YouTube channel. It lives for evergreen out there. I'm going to put keywords that say Nashville home buying process, buying a home in Nashville, first time home buyer, whatever it is. I now have 12 pieces of content on my YouTube channel that I also can use forever and send those links to anybody and everybody throughout the process. Meetup groups are 100% like a great source. And here's what I love about meetup groups and something like this. Everything that you do does not have to be real estate related. And I'm going to say that again. Everything you do does not have to be real estate related. And here's why I'm saying this. Genuine connections with people happen over common interests. They happen over relatable activities and conversations. So if you love to walk, join a walking group, meet people, let them get to know you, talk about your business. You like to play chess. You like to knit scarves. You like to drink bourbon. You like to cook. You like to homeschool your kids. You like to raise goats. You like to grow chicken eggs. Whatever you do, I don't care. But meetup groups give you a great opportunity to connect with people on a personal level over your hobbies and interests that will allow for more authentic relationships than just a Facebook post, is what I'm getting at. Spend your time doing things that are not real estate related and insert your real estate business where that exists. You're going to find that those relationships are deeper and more meaningful, and people are going to trust you more than some tag on a Facebook group. Utilize the Nextdoor app. If you don't know what that is, download Nextdoor. They do have advertising, but if you actually are just very active on Nextdoor and answering people's questions, inserting, because remember, here's how you advertise without advertising. If someone asks a question, like, we're thinking of remodeling our bathroom, do you guys have any suggestions? I'm looking at my neighborhood and the surrounding neighborhoods to be able to answer that question and insert, I recommend this person to all my real estate clients and they've had great success with it. So I just advertise my real estate business without advertising my business by just saying my clients liked these people. Or someone's looking to build a fence. I have recommended this company to at least 25 of my clients, and people will look on your profile to see what kind of clients does she have. And then they learn that you're a realtor, right? If you haven't inserted that. But the more you engage in those groups, the more you add value to the groups, the more you answer questions in those groups, the more you are seen and advertising your business without promoting your business. Build a hyperlocal landing page. This would be like, I use these for neighborhoods. So again, if I was farming a neighborhood, like I'll use Cannonwood and Franklin as an example. If I were farming this neighborhood, I might create a hyperlocal page for Cannonwood and call it Cannonwood VIPs. And on that page, I would have links to local events. I would maybe hire a food truck once a month on certain days in the neighborhood and post when that is. I might, do a canned food drive and you can drop off, you know, put a box on a couple porches in the neighborhood, the people that I know. But basically you're going to create a landing page for the people in that neighborhood to go to for coupons, for information, for market reports, events, something like that. Building a blog. Blogs are still exist out there. I would encourage you to build a vlog instead of a blog. So use video, but you're definitely going to want to use keywords and SEO and specific information related to what you want people to know about working with you. Hosting events. I'm a big fan of events. I think you should be having them at least once a month or once a quarter. And depending on the size, you should be having different types of events. I love to do charitable events. And we're going to talk about this next week when we talk about event planning. But I like to couple charitable things with it. So I might host a dinner party, but it might have a canned food drive attached to it. So where I ask people to bring that, or I ask people to bring school supplies, or I ask them to bring dog toys so that we can make a donation to the animal shelter or something like that. But I love to couple philanthropic things with social events. I also try to think of events that are not real estate tangentially related sometimes. So it might be a bourbon tasting. It might be a concert or singer-songwriter night. It might be a soup swap. It might be a meal prep Sunday, whatever it is. It does not have to be real estate related. I'm going to keep telling you that over and over and over again. Just do things that are fun and that you enjoy, that give you an opportunity to meet people and engage with people. Sponsoring teacher appreciation days at local schools. It doesn't have to just be on teacher appreciation day. You could literally come in, like three times a year and bring, I would like to bring lunch for your staff today, or I would give, your teachers, make them all goodie bags or something like that. But just partner with your school, see what it is. Or maybe you take some of the schools, all these teachers have wish lists on Amazon. you know, maybe you ask for some of the teacher's wish list and get you and your friends to help purchase some of the items on the teacher's wish list. Or maybe you volunteer at the school that you just want to be more engaged in the school where you can meet the families. Volunteering at the book fair is always a great way to meet a lot of the families, meet a lot of the kids, things like that. But think about how you can be more involved in the school. I have other coaching clients whose kids are still in primary school, like daycare. You might want to partner with your daycare and say, I want to capture the new people, you know, new families coming to our school. How can I best do that? And maybe that means you host a dinner for new families once a month or something like that. But think about, is there a way for you to extract business from a relationship at a school you're already attached to or involved in? I love fundraising for local charities. You guys know that about me. I do make the donation public. Use your press releases to get more attention out of it. You're not doing it for the press release, but you might as well extract some additional attention from it if you're going to put forth the effort and energy. Some of my favorite ones are feeding people. So that means I'm going to partner with local food banks, or you can raise $1,000 that buys an entire tractor trailer full of food that would feed hundreds of families for $1,000. So again, I would rather you spend money that way and make a real impact and influence people than to spend $1,000 on Zillow and get four leads and you've impacted nobody, right? So that's just me. That's personally how I'd rather spend my money. Buy a meal for local fire department nurses or first responders. Again, there are tons of people like this, your first responders that you can love on, that you can, you know, have a barbecue for, that you can drop off meals for, that you can, you know, drop off donuts to their nursing station. You can, you know, drop off gift cards for Grubhub or DoorDash for the fire department or whatever it is, or buy their groceries one week. Hey, I'd love to give you a gift card to Kroger, because often they're buying their own food, obviously, while they're on call. So, but love on your first responders too. Organize a neighborhood safety awareness program. I think this is a really big deal. You may want to have an instructor come in and talk about, you know, hey, here are how we can, you know, keep our neighborhood safer. Here's some things to look out for. I live out in the country in Leaper's Fork on 5 acres. Some of you have been to my house. You know, you're not coming up my driveway unless you have purpose. But I actually read on my Facebook, our Leaper's Fork Facebook page last night, that there was a car driving around stopping at random houses at midnight, knocking on doors saying that they were lost, coming up these mile driveways or 2 mile driveways and parking behind people's houses. That's scary to me, because you have a false sense of security living in the country. You don't see as much, you know, people knocking on your doors and things like that. But maybe your neighborhood or a neighborhood that you're farming, your citizens have had some break-ins lately, or car break-ins, or maybe the lights are busted or whatever it is, but organizing a neighborhood safety awareness program or some type of, you know, webinar or something where people can learn how to protect themselves is always a great idea too. Door knocking is not for everybody, but if you are going to knock on some doors, don't, you know, I personally don't like my dogs getting involved in that. I also don't like people knocking on my door to sell things. So I would just tell you, if you are going to knock on door, have things of value. So have a market report for the neighborhood. If you live in the neighborhood, you say, I'm a neighbor. I want to introduce myself to you. I also just want to let you know that we have the house around the corner listed if you want to help pick the neighbor of who moves in. There is an app you can use called My Door Knocker Pal that will help you track which houses you've been to and who talks to you, who's asked for more information or something like that. It's not my favorite strategy, but it's on the list. Sponsor refreshments for teachers at parent teacher conference night. This is a big night where teachers don't get to go home. They're typically there all day long, and then they have parent teacher night. And then they're stuck not having anything to eat. So this might be a night that you and some of your sponsors decide to go ahead and have dinner catered for the teachers that night, so they don't have to go home or run through the drive-through in the 6 minutes they have between classes and that kind of thing. Host a social media contest. So I love contests. I love coloring contests. Like, here's some coloring sheets for a movie that's come out. You guys may have seen that when, what's the Halloween movie? The Hocus Pocus. Thank you, Killer. Thank you, Claire. Hocus Pocus. So like when Hocus Pocus 2 came out, I posted coloring sheets for Hocus Pocus 2 that were just centered around the movie or scenes from the movie. Had people, you know, post their finished ones. We took a vote and voted for the best one and then sent a little gift to the kid that had the best one. So I like contests like that, or, you know, pumpkin carving, or, you know, show me your decorated door, or show me your, you know, your Halloween, your holiday decoration, Easter egg things, whatever, some kind of contest that just makes it fun, gets people to engage with you. Buy leads from, we talked about paid leads, host an open house. So here's what I'm gonna say about open houses. Agents roll their eyes at me all the time when I say, how many open houses have you done? And I hate them. I've actually, in my 25 years, I've definitely put in my dues and done lots and lots and lots of open houses. But here's what I will tell you. Open houses have always been a great source of free clients to me. The acquisition cost for me on that is my time. That's it. I don't really spend a lot of money putting on an open house. I spend a lot of time driving people to the open house, promoting the open house, marketing the open house, but I don't actually have to spend a lot of money to actually acquire a new client. The other thing is that typically I'm so charming with my wonderful personality that I have been able to convert people in who had not even thought about buying a house, or maybe they were just tire kickers and wanted to see the neighbor's house or whatever, but now they all of a sudden want to buy a house and now they're my client. Or if you ask the dreadful question, do you already have an agent? The answer is always yes for most people because they lie. Or that agent has been sending them listings, but they actually haven't signed an agreement with an agent. I have converted a lot of people like that as my clients as well, that were not actually committed to an agent yet, but there was a rapport and trust that we built at an open house that wanted them to work with me in the future. Yesterday there was a listing in Franklin for $799. If any of you guys follow Krista, Jameson, she had a listing for $799 that she totally gutted and redid and designed. They had over 100 people attend their open house yesterday. Now, $700,000 in Franklin is a golden nugget. That's a great listing, a great price for Franklin, but 100 people at the open house, right? That's 100 people you get to follow up with, right? That's 100 people that you didn't have to spend $50 a person to generate, right? Some of those people are going to have agents, that's fine, but that's a great opportunity for you to convert people to clients. That's a great opportunity for you to step in your follow-up after the open house and send them items of value, 7 to 10 touches to convert them into a client. And you did not spend a lot of money, you just spent time, okay? So even if you don't want to do the open houses, you should. And I want you to be very selective about the houses that you are selecting. If you don't have listings of your own, I want you to find a listing that is new to the market or newer, no more than 2 weeks old. I also want you to find one that's actually easy to find. It's not in the back of the neighborhood, 28 turns in. It is something that you think is sellable. It is something that you think would attract attention to, and then your job is to drive traffic to the open house. But stop holding houses that have been on the market for 4 months open. Nobody's coming to look at those. Okay. The other thing, last thing I'll say about open houses is that I've had clients try different dates and times. You might get one or two or three people on a Saturday from 1 to 2, but typically people go to open houses on Sunday from 2 to 4 or 12 to 4, whatever hours you want. But these Tuesdays at 6 o'clock, you're not going to get as much traffic as you would on a Sunday. I'm not telling you not to try alternative dates and times. I just want you to manage your expectations about whether or not you're going to get enough traffic to make it worthwhile for you. Plan a progressive open house. So right now, while we have houses sitting on the market a little bit longer, a progressive open house means that you're going to have 5 or 6 houses open all at the same time. They don't necessarily have to be open all at the same time. You can do, this house is from 12 to 12:30. The second house is from 12:30 to 1. The third house is from 1 to 130. You can stagger it that way too. I've done them both ways. But you basically want to choose houses that are close together, either in the same neighborhood or within a couple miles of each other. You want to plan out the number of houses that there are going to be. You want to market and promote those houses that somebody has. This person has lunch. This person has a dessert. This person has a prize. Or you can have three different things at the three houses. It doesn't matter. But I would recommend on a progressive open house that each house has or offers something different. And if you want people to see all seven houses, you might want to implement some kind of stamp program or a punch card or something like that and have a big prize for somebody who looks at all seven houses or something like that. But I've loved progressive open houses. They've always been a great source of driving traffic. But again, I don't care what you have. Your job is to market and promote it to get people in to make sure that they're there. Okay. Create videos of neighborhoods. So again, using your videos, because you can put that on YouTube. It lives forever. It's indexed faster with Google. Have videos of neighborhoods where you go through the neighborhood and say, in Old Hickory Village, there's a bunch of different styles of houses. You can talk about the various price ranges. You can talk about the amenities. You can highlight Dose, the new coffee shop around you. You can highlight the proximity to the lake. Like, that's a video that you could do very quickly and easily and showcase some of the streets in the neighborhood. You can talk about the houses that have sold recently and the price per square foot. That lives forever and also establishes you as the neighborhood expert. It does not only have to be the neighborhood you live in. It can be any neighborhood that you want to focus and feature. Because remember, especially if you pick neighborhoods that are popular, especially with new construction, utilize all the money that those builders are spending to drive traffic to their website and utilize their name in your keywords and in your video. And guess what? The money they're spending in marketing is also going to help your stuff be seen. Make a Google listing is basically your Google business review. So that is making sure that, you know, you have reviews there. You have a video there of an introduction that talks about who you are. You maybe post an article. Google will allow your Google business page will allow you to actually post updates. So you could dump your market update report. You could dump, your one sheet. You could dump any kind of stuff that you want in your Google business profile. But most people do exactly what I told you earlier. They create the profile and then let it live there. You're not actively using it. And you could use your Google business profile a lot more. Work on soliciting your reviews from Google or Yelp. So for people like Kim that are brand new and you don't have a lot of testimonials yet, remember, you can ask for reviews of people who know you, like you, and trust you. They don't have to have bought a house from you. Or are there vendors that you've worked with recently? Would you mind writing a Yelp review or a Google review of what it was like to work with me? Even though they didn't buy or sell a house from you, they've been working with you, right? Or they know you. Sponsor youth team sports. I always tell you, if you're going to do this, get more than just your name on the kids' t-shirt. Sponsor the end of the season party so that everybody knows who you are on the team. They know what you do. Make sure you're more involved than just your name on a t-shirt or a banner on the fence at the high school, okay? Again, if I'm going to sponsor the team sports, for example, let's say that the softball team at Centennial High School called me and wanted me to sponsor and put a banner on their fence. Yeah, that's fine. I don't mind the banner on the fence, but I actually want to provide dinner one night before a game, or I want to treat them after a game to, you know, ice cream or something like that. But I want to be involved and I want visibility, right? So in exchange for my money, I want involvement, or in exchange for my money, I want exposure to the people so that I can make sure I extract and get an opportunity to talk about what I do. Does that make sense? Don't just give your money to shit. You know, don't just put your face on the grocery cart. Make sure that there's actual some return and exposure for you. Start a small business networking group. We've talked about this before. This would be like your, you know, local business networking group. There's lots of people that I've coached that are in this room and not in this room that have started their own or joined them. It's basically, you know, B&I is very expensive. It has a high monthly fee. There's also a lot of rules about it, you know, attendance, you get kicked out of the group if you miss more than so many meetings. But networking groups are a great source of referrals if they are run properly and if the group commits to looking for opportunities for each other. Direct mail campaign or community event at apartment complex. This is going to be a little tough. Obviously, you can do direct mail campaigns where you get the addresses to the apartments and you mail things to them. That's fine. I would encourage you to maybe host an event that says, how do you go from being an apartment liver to a homeowner? You know, download my 12-step guide of becoming a homeowner after living in an apartment, or things you need to know about buying a home since you've only lived in an apartment, or something like that. But all these apartment complexes around Middle Tennessee, the rents are high, right? They're full of amenities, but that high rent converts to a mortgage payment. And there are lots of people that live in apartments that certainly can afford a mortgage payment, but they're spending it on high amenity apartment complexes. The other thing is that sometimes these apartment complexes, especially these ones that are highly amenitized, they all have social calendars. So, you know, on Tuesdays, they do wine and they'll do a wine tasting on the last day of the month, or they have board games, or they have blah, 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 blah. If you know a resident in the community, see if they'll invite you to an event, you know, one of the resident events that you can just tag along with, and just start to meet people in the apartment complex. Oh, I'm visiting my friend. I don't actually live here. If they'll let you, I just want to make sure you know you are going to get some pushback from the apartment complex because they don't want you stealing all their residents. But there are ways to interact or to develop a campaign where you are trying to convert apartment dwellers to homeowners. Partner with a moving company for leads of renters. Again, my moving company gets referred to every single one of my clients. So I've sent that person thousands of moves in the last 5 years, at least several hundred in the last 5 years, whereas he has also opportunities for me of people who have called him that are renters that then go on my list that for the next year, I'm going to be sending them things over the next year so that when that person is ready to stop being a renter, again, that's a longer term incubation, but that's just another strategy. Find vacant properties or non-owner occupied homes and send CMAs. That's going to come from your tax records. You can pull a list of non-owner occupied people. Or if you're driving around, you find vacant properties, you certainly could send that owner a CMA or a HER report or some type of marketing information. Place flyers, cards, etc. on community bulletin boards. I don't see this much anymore, but every Panera has a community bulletin board in it. Churches usually have community bulletin boards. Local mom and pop cafes have community boards. My local watering hole, my favorite bar to go to, has a bulletin board. Put your card on it, put a flyer on it, put something on it. But that's free advertising for you. Again, this is going to be passive, not active. I want you to have a healthy combination of active activities, but that's just a suggestion. I want you to think of it too. You know, the graffiti, indoor graffiti advertising that's on the back of all the toilet doors in all the places you go, the restaurants and the bars. That's the example of what I'm getting at. Graffiti is actually not really expensive. It's just a place for you to market and promote. I thought it was not bad for the number of impressions you get, but again, it's more passive. Someone's sitting down, going to the restroom, and they're reading your advertisement. Is there somewhere that you can put your flyers that has a captive audience is what I'm getting at. Okay. Is there someone that's looking for your services that might come across it? Advertise in a neighborhood newsletter. So there are neighborhoods like West Haven that have a book that comes out once a month that is their neighborhood newsletter. They sell advertising slots in that. There may be a local, so again, not the regular newspaper, but there's like the little small town Williamson County Press newspaper. You might want to advertise in that. Or there's like the franklinis.com or your Williamson County magazine, Nashville Lifestyles. There's tons of places you can advertise in to promote your business. Some are going to be more expensive than others, but are there places where people would look for your services that you can put yourself there? Have you ever looked into militarybyowner.com? Google that. It basically is a website near military bases, and most military people use it when they are relocating or PCSing to another base. Militarybyowner.com, they have listings for rent and for sale, but you actually can promote, you can do a sponsored ad on the base page. So if you go to militarybyowner.com, you click on Fort Campbell, there's actually sponsored ad positions there. And I've posted a rental on there recently, and I did not see, I think there were only two or three realtors posted there. So like I said, it's a great opportunity, but is there somewhere like that, that you can post your business or buy a sponsored ad on, or be, you know, the agent that they promote? Is there space on there for you? And think about where you might be able to put it. Go to garage sales. Are these people moving soon? Can you drop off a garage sale kit to a homeowner if you see that they're having, you see like yard sale on Saturday, find the house that the yard sale is at, drop off a garage sale kit that would include like Sharpies, stickers, maybe a cash box or some kind of box, maybe just some poster board, something like that. But what can you do? Just drop by garage sales and say, are you moving? Typically garage sales are a preemptive thing for why people are moving. Create an ebook or special report on specific topics of interest. Join or sponsor an adult sports league. So, you know, there are volleyball, there's bowling, there's darts, there's kickball, there's all kinds of adult sports leagues that you might be interested in playing or just watching. You might want to sponsor, you might want to join, up to you. Join a book club or sponsor a small business book club. There are so many like regular fiction book clubs, but maybe you want to do a small business book club, which is highlighting and focusing on business building books, or, and that way you could have other industries join that as well. But I love book clubs. I love cooking clubs. I love things like that, that are more about interests that we talked about. Start a podcast if that's in your wheelhouse. Bottom line is you're just going to drop information over time and make sure you're promoting it. Provide seasonal pop-by gifts to your sphere or neighborhood. You guys already know I'm a big fan of those. You don't have to spend a lot of money to do this. You also can choose different groups of people. So again, remember back to that budget that we had. Let's say my budget for marketing my business for the whole month is $1,000. I could take a portion of that $1,000 and purchase pop by supplies and have a list of 100 people who get a pop by. That $100, you know, 100 list of people is going to get so much more impact than waste than $100 on a Zillow ad where you get 3 leads, in my opinion. So I would rather see you use that money to love on your people than just doing it on the internet where it's 8 times harder to convert those internet leads. Work expired listings with calls, CMAs, helpful info. I know this is on a list and a lot of people go, ugh, I hate expires. So my mother was a realtor, in case you guys didn't know. And a lot of her business was actually came from expired listings, but she had a routine. And this was one lead generation strategy that she picked and decided she was going to do consistently every single day. So every day she would go to the hot list, pull the list of expired listings, make sure that they were not relisted. And then she would draft a letter to every single one of those expired listings saying, you know, I have reviewed your property. I have some ideas about why it hasn't sold. And I would love to talk to you more about that. Give me a call. I also could save you, and she would have a discount for each one of those people, whatever that was, $500, $200, didn't matter what it was, but she had a discount that said, you know, listing with me could save you $500. And she had a steady stream of 8 to 10 listings a month that only came from expires. Now, here's what I will warn you. Expired listings, and I could teach a whole class on it. They are challenging because often there's a reason it didn't sell the first time. Sometimes that's price. It's typically price. It's always price. And sometimes it's condition. So I will tell you, my mother had to work really hard on those expired listings in terms of getting the seller to be reasonable about the price. And she had to spend a lot of elbow grease to get the houses sometimes ready to go on the market to make the greatest first impression. But here's my point. My job is not to tell you whether or not expired listings are for you or not for you. I'm telling you that sometimes they can be a source of business for people. And my job is just to give you the strategy, and your job is to decide if that's for you. Here's what I will tell you. If you're going to work expired listings as one of your lead generation strategies, make sure that you can be objective about what you see could be done better in the listing without violating the code of ethics. So that means you're not throwing the other agent under the bus. or not talking about them in a negative way. You can do it in a very objective way by saying, there are some things that I see that I think we could do differently, right? The other part is just know that you're going to have tough conversations about price. And if you're okay with having those, that might be a great strategy for you. But I just want you to know what you're going to be up against. Is there going to be a conversation about price? And there's going to have to be some work when it comes to condition, typically, to make that house sellable. But it can be a source of great business for some people. Work for sale by owner listings. This is another strategy. Again, they're not for everybody. Every agent I know, most of them think, well, I'm not going to call expired and I'm not going to call for sale by owners because everybody's already doing that. And I would love to tell you that everybody is already doing that, but the truth is they aren't. Most agents already know that there's some rejection that comes with both of those categories, and they fear rejection, so they don't call. So don't talk yourself out of doing something for fear of, oh, well, everyone else is already doing that. Most agents are not doing it. So I'm just telling you that. The other part with for sale by owner listings is that most for sale by owners are trying it on their own to see if they can save money, right? Your goal when working with for sale by owners is to show them, and this is what you say to them, if I could show you that you could net more money, even with paying my fee, would that be worth a conversation to you? And what you're going to explain to them is that for sale by owners on national average only receive 91 to 92% of their list price. Agents, like the National Association of Realtors, showed that agents, owners that have hired agents to sell their house end up getting 99 to 101% of their list price. And if you break down the math and show them what 99% versus 91% and then show your fee, the net will typically be larger even with your fee. And you can say, if I can show you with the math that you can afford to hire me and still make more money, would that be worth a conversation to you? That's my for sale by owner script. That's how I've been successful in getting them. But again, just know you're going to run into the challenge. They're going to beat you up on the price. They're also going to beat you up on your commission. So just be prepared. Partner with a diverse attorney. We've talked about this when we did our B2B. Same thing with the financial advisor. Partner with an insurance person. Again, don't be afraid to ask your insurance person, hey, is there a way that I could get exposure to your book of business? Are there clients of yours that have been in their home for more than 5 years that you've been doing the insurance policy for that I might be able to send some information to, or I might be able to get in front of? Could we host a webinar for them or an in-person event? Okay. Develop a relationship with an HR department for relocation business. I want you to choose HR departments for companies that have less than 100 employees or less than 300 employees, because typically the companies that have more employees than that typically already have a relocation company that they work with that's a third-party relocation company. So I want you to choose smaller employers. I want you to choose employers or companies that have smaller footprint that allows you to be able to develop relationships with them. This is like the HR director at a hospital that does credentialing for me. Okay. Establish relationships with agents outside of your selling area for referral business. Identify where people are coming from. Choose 10 agents in each one of those states. Make sure they have your one sheet. Make sure they have a letter of introduction. Make sure you send them a small little handwritten note. Make sure that they know you are the go-to person if they have somebody moving to Nashville or wherever you live, okay? But by partnering with agents outside, building your referral business up that way, when you go to conferences, make sure you are meeting people that have the potential to send business to you. How often do they meet clients that are moving to the area you live in? And how can I earn your referrals? What does it take to get your referral business? Write articles for the local newspaper. You guys can do this at any time. It doesn't have to be the big newspaper. It can be any of these local websites as well. If you want to contribute your analysis of what's happening in the market, if you want to contribute your analysis about a particular new construction neighborhood, if you want to talk about things that buyers, you know, five mistakes buyers might make or seven things that sellers, should do before getting their house ready to go on the market. Journalists are always looking for ideas for content. whether that's on the TV show or if that's in the newspaper or in these magazines, you guys have access to the content. You have access to the content that they want, and don't be afraid to pitch your idea to a journalist to get space there. Submit press releases to local media outlets for articles written, events hosted, etc. Anytime you're doing a charity event, anytime you have put on an event that is popular or that you want people to know about, anytime that you have participated in something, you should be using press releases to get free press to promote your activities. Visit new construction sites, publish information about the amenities, about the floor plans, about the prices, about the incentives. Right now, you know, there's Old South right now is doing a $99 closing cost and $99 deposit with their preferred lender. That's cheap to get into a new construction contract. $99 closing costs and $99 deposit for a new construction build. That's Old South right now. So are there other new construction companies that you want to highlight? Are there incentives that these builders are now offering again to try to get rid of their inventory? You should be visiting those sites, being familiar with the floor plans, being familiar with what the community is offering and what those incentives are, and being the source of the information. I always have joined the Home Builders Association on here, but I will tell you right now, joining the association itself, just like joining the Chamber of Commerce or anything else like that, unless you are going to be actively engaged in it and participating in events, do not expect to extract business from it. So you can join the Chamber of Commerce, but if you don't go to the ribbon cutting ceremonies, if you don't go to the monthly workshops, if you just have a membership and think you're going to be in the membership guide and that's going to be enough to get you business, it won't. So if you're going to join the Home Builders Association, participate, go to the meetings, meet with the individual home builder that are members one-on-one, put packets in their hands. But do you get access to that roster of builders by joining? Yes. So do something with it. Host a book swap, wine swap, soup swap, whatever. I love these, especially like a meal prep event. Book swaps are great. Soup swap is where I actually buy the containers, like the 2-quart plastic containers, a lot that you would get like your fried rice in at a Chinese restaurant. You know what I'm talking about? Those soup containers. I actually buy those in bulk online. I host a soup swap, said, hey, it's winter time. I love soups. Who loves soups as much as I do? I'm hosting a soup swap with basically I provide the containers. You make whatever kind of soup you want in the containers. We all get together on that day. I have some snacks and drinks, and you just pick which soups you want off of the table. It's like a cookie swap at Christmas, right? But try to think of things that you think your people would want to do. And that's just one strategy. All right. I've gone through all 50 with you. Again, you're not going to do all of these. Pick a couple, do something, or come up with your own that you think are going to be best suited for your personality. But the bottom line is, if you heard me say nothing else, I will tell you, you're going to get more authentic leads from things that you are passionate about, more engaged in, the more things you participate in. They do not have to all be real estate related. They just have to be interesting to you. You have to have some kind of interest and passionate and involvement in it. And then the other part I'm going to tell you is the power is not in the thing you're doing, the thing you're actually doing. The power is in the follow-up system that you have in place after the thing you're doing. Okay, the follow-up comes from, if I have an event, the event is great. I want the event to go off wonderfully. I want everyone to have a good time. But really, the goal of the event is to extract business from it. So in order to do that, I have to have a good follow-up plan after the event that says, thanks for coming. I'm sorry I missed you. I promised you at the event that I would send you this guide, or that I would connect you with my accountant, or whatever the promise was that I made. But your job is to make sure that your follow-up after that event is tight, that your follow-up is purposeful, and that you don't just follow up once. How many touches do you need to go? 7 to 10. Thank you. 7 to 10 touches, period. I hope this was helpful to you guys. Don't be afraid to spend money to acquire some business, okay? Just be careful about how much money you're spending and make sure that it actually has a return on your investment, whether that's time or money. Okay. You guys go out there and slay, go get it. Bye, guys.